Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. It is your boy, C-I-Z-Z-Y, your dig, live action, Kansas City, Missouri, literally. And I say literally because behind the camera right now is downtown. We got the buildings, the skyscrapers. And if you aren't from Kansas City, you probably like, y'all got skyscrapers? Y'all got a downtown? Yeah, man. We an official city now. And we've been an official city for a while, but y'all just starting to understand because shout out Patty Mahomes. You dig? Shout out the KC Current. You dig? Shout out Sporting KC for winning a few championships a few years ago, bringing some attention to the city. We got the NFL draft coming in less than 2 weeks. Exactly two weeks. About 2 weeks from now, we got the NFL draft coming. And then we got World Cup 2026, baby. This city going up. And with that being said, we're going to talk a little bit about that and the implications that might have on the town, on Web3, and on the life of our guest, Richard. So, Richard, I just said your name, but go ahead and introduce yourself to the folks out there, my guy.
First of all, you know, pleasure you having me. Name's Richard Chungong. Appreciate you having me on the show. My name's Richard Chungong, founder and owner of Dash In Between. Basically, a focus on consultation, education, and creative direction with creators and businesses trying to integrate Web3, cryptocurrency, non-fungible tokens into their business and better exposing, especially in the Black community, how we can use this innovative technology to our advantage.
I love it. And what do you remember? Let's double it back a few months. What do you remember about the first time we met or where we met? Like, share that story with the folks from what you remember. Use a little bit of brain power. We're going to see if you're correct. You know what I'm saying? And then, like I said, I'm going to do, you know what I'm saying? Keep that mic up here the whole time so it's not rubbing against that t-shirt.
Yeah.
Tell me the story. What happened? How do we meet? How do we connect?
Yeah, and you just got on me about the mic, so I'm going to remember that. So 1 million cups, correct? You were presenting. Like I said, I was out there just networking and stuff like that. And then you presented on, you know, the ideas and, you know, the values that you're trying to bring with your podcast. You know, piqued my interest, you know, especially being in the tech space, just wanted to create, you know, with people that are also trying to create and do things differently. So we ended up connecting and, you know, putting the foundation together for, you know, having this conversation. We did it the first time during COVID times. You know, it seems like three different lifetimes, honestly. Right. Like, we had like the first COVID part, we had the part where people were wearing masks, not wearing masks, mm-hmm. and then we were just like, okay, I think life is kind of back to normal mm-hmm. part. So in our second life of COVID, I guess, you know, when we were still on Zoom and stuff like that, we had a Zoom one that, you know, everything in Zoom was kind of finicky, but yeah, you know, man, we had to redo it, you know, make sure, like I said, we get that, you know, authentic conversation and stuff like that, especially
flow a good audio so y'all can receive the message Richard's bringing a little bit clear, you know.
Exactly.
I think as much as I love virtual, you know, ain't gonna lie, in terms of its convenience, mm-hmm. in terms of the ability to connect with people across the country, across the continents,
I've
had a few guests on, from one from Spain, one from back home in Tanzania, so the ability to do that virtually is a blessing. But sometimes, man, the audio be fucking up, the Wi-Fi be disconnecting, and you might even have four bars and it's still not working correctly.
Exactly.
So it's a very finicky, like you said, finicky line. So talk to me about, you know, we discussed this for a few seconds before we turned on the camera, and you kind of shortly mentioned it there. You know, I see you at a lot of events throughout Kansas City, Missouri, and the tech space and entrepreneurship space.
Yep.
Talk to me about the value you find as an individual who is trying to create awareness in Web3 and, you know, the spaces surrounding Web3 as well. You know, we got crypto kind of surrounds Web3. We have mm-hmm. a few other blockchain technologies that just kind of are encompassed inside the mm-hmm. word, you know, the phrase Web3. So, you know, I see you at a lot of these spaces. Where do you see the value, especially in a community that's still growing like this, where you kind of see the same people every time? At least that's how I feel.
For sure. It's the same
you
people.
You know, I want to kind of hear, why are you going to those events so consistently, so often, and maybe how, you know, it's benefited you so that other people can see how that might benefit them, especially a lot of the people watching are going to be from entrepreneur backgrounds or start a business. So
one thing, and I'll kind of just get back to, you know, the point that we talked about earlier, was being a former athlete, I just kind of relate going to these things similar to how practice was. Mm-hmm. You know, they say perfect your craft, and, you know, practice makes, as they say, perfect, but no, practice just makes permanent. Mm-hmm. You know, and the fact that if you constantly keep on going at it, and the fact that you just create a habit to where now, like I said, maybe like I said, for podcasting, maybe something you wanted to work on was questions. So now you get into the networking space. And now, even if you talk to this person 50 million times, there's another question that you can figure out how to get more out of that person. Yeah. So there's always a way that you can constantly work on your craft, whether you've gone to practice 50 million times, maybe you haven't worked on one-handed catches. So now you work on one-handed catches when you go to this event or this practice. So that's kind of the way I've just kind of just processed on how to look at going about the mundane over and over. And then also at the same time too, you know, the fact that I talk about something that, you know, 95% of the world thinks is a scam or, you know, is undervalued right now. I think that's what kind of keeps me going in the matter of just going to these networking events, especially in Kansas City, where it seems like it's the same 6, 7, 10 people or whatever. You might get a 15, be like, oh, wait, but then I saw that person at another event earlier today. So it's like, it's interesting.
Wednesdays. Shout out to Wednesdays.
Shout out to Wednesdays. Like Wednesdays, I see probably like the same people, six people.
Like five.
I'm like, hey, what's good, bro? I'll see you at this time. Yep. And then now if I don't see you, now I'll be like, hey man, where's it? And so like you start seeing like it's things like that that build that community where it's like
that's real.
You check up on people and it's like, yo, bro, like I know you usually here on the Wednesdays, like, you know, you good, you know, come and find out. It's like, yeah, we had something in the family or whatever it is. And maybe you guys weren't as much business partners like that or had the same industry, but just off of that genuine awareness of this person is usually always here, somebody in the group probably will have the common awareness to be like, hey, you know, let's shoot a text to make sure that they're good and stuff like that too. So I think that it also, you know, puts you in that community awareness, which I think is definitely good.
That's valid. And I think you just brought up a point that you just brought up a point that I didn't necessarily consider, but I think is actually the most impactful thing about attending these events, especially in a smaller town, but even in a bigger town. Like, community is such an overused word, but it's so real. Community's not built upon your first meeting.
Exactly.
Community's built upon 1,000 conversations.
Yep.
Community's built upon 1,000, you know, lessons, 1,000 experiences, and being able to present that engaging conversation around those things that you're facing, those challenges or the wins
exactly.
that you're celebrating with similar people or similar community over and over again. And that's where genuine relationships build, and that's where genuine impact happens. When you're constantly trying to meet new people just to say you networked, that's not real networking.
Exactly.
And that's where people go wrong. They go this meeting, over there, and then they never go back because they're just constantly trying to stack their contact list, but then they never contact anybody.
You got a bunch of business cards and they can't do nothing with it.
And guess what? Even if you try to tap into one of those individuals, if you only have one conversation with you, the likelihood that the value you're bringing to the table or you asking for something, the likelihood that they are going to text you back or actually be inspired or feel this
connection.
Desire to help you or desire to work with you is probably not going to happen because there's no connection.
Exactly.
So I do see that value there. I asked that question because I had a conversation with an individual the other day here in Kansas City who said they stopped going to these events because they kept seeing the same people.
Yeah.
And I know I see you all the time.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know what? Let me follow up with that question.
Yeah.
You mentioned you are a former athlete. So let's dive back to the origins of Richard. First off, you have a dope ass last name, which then lets us know that, you probably got some, rich heritage. So I want you to start there. And then from there, let's transition into, you know, just your upbringing and how that got you into athletics and what role football and other sports played in terms of your growth into who you are as an individual today.
Yeah, I mean, family's from Cameroon, Africa, West Africa. Shout out to the homeland, you know what I'm saying? Always got to, you know, shout that out. But, you know, raised, you know, parents, you know, education was a big thing. I was terrible, not say terrible in school. I just didn't like school because I didn't see the interest side of things. So it was always hard to get me into school. But when I got into sports and there was the criteria of you have to have certain grades, that's when my interest changed with schools where it's like, okay, can't be messing around in school if I want to play. So that's why the incentive things always falls big in the fact of if you can find a way to get people to do things, you'll get them to do what you need them to do. But, you know, coming from, you know, Cameroon, sports isn't really taken serious like that. You know, we have soccer and stuff like that, but in a matter of playing it professionally or
it's more of the culture than it is money.
Exactly.
Career,
so
right.
Exactly. So, you know, things like engineers, doctors, nurses, those are the things, you know, pharmacists, like those are the things that are taken serious where it's like if you want to start a profession, that's what you go do. So me going a line of, you know, I wanted to, you know, be in the States, wanting to play in the NFL and, you know, get my mama out, you know, to take care of everything.
The whole storyline
and everything. That's the kind of narrative that I wanted to do. But then as I started getting, you know, like I said, into the college ranks, did that, was lucky enough to play college football on a scholarship, which, you know, like I said, I'm very thankful for. Then that led me to, you know, playing, you know, ball overseas and stuff like that too. But football really for me, what it did was it allowed me to get structure for a person that did not like structure. I spoke to the, you know, the practice sense. I'm a person that, like, unless I have an incentive, it's hard for me to get to do something over and over and over and over and over again.
And like Marshawn Lynch says,
and over and over. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's you have to have some type of incentive. For him, it's like, I'll run through your face because I know I'm going to get my family paid. Mm-hmm. So it's like, for me, it's like now it gave me the structure to understand that, okay, if I want something bad enough, I have to be able to commit so wholeheartedly that I'm willing to do whatever for it, you know? And that's what kind of led me to, you know, this whole business sense and this thing that, if I believe in something, that even if people don't see it like that way, I'm going to try to find a way to make logical sense for not only myself, but then now throughout my lifestyle and things like that, people will be like, well, maybe that kind of is possible or makes sense and things like that too.
Do you feel like you really loved football genuinely, or do you feel like that commitment to the sport and that desire to keep going was strictly or heavily based off of the storyline that's created around the black community of, like, if you play this sport, you have the potential to go pro and then get your parents into a better situation? Do you feel like it was heavy that, or do you feel like it was heavy, yo, I'm in love with this shit. Like, I really love it. I really love showing up every day and hitting the motherfucker in their mouth. Excuse my language, but.
I mean, shoot. I think it's a combination of both. And the fact that, one, obviously the narrative as a young black boy in America that, hey, you build a Tesla or Microsoft, it's probably not as plausible. You becoming president of the United States, even though it's not the most treasurable thing anymore, you know what I mean? That's not possible. Mm-hmm. For us, it's seen as sports, basketball, football, you know, maybe track, entertainment. Mm-hmm. Those outlets are the things that are more or less seen as that's attainable. So for me, it was put into that attainable category. But at the same time, too, I also really liked the sport. You know, I just happened to be very talented at it. And it came easily. You know, I had good speed, you know, and I was very coachable. I liked to learn and stuff like that. And so it was always a challenge all the time for me. So for understanding, in my sense, it was like I definitely loved the game of football. Now, lifting weights, not my thing. I show up on game day, yeah, I do that, you know what I'm saying? But, I'd probably say it was a combination of the fact that the narrative was there, being young and black, that's what you generally kind of geared towards. But then also, I definitely just love the game of the competition side of things, too.
And so, going back to your high school days and then transitioning into college, and then we'll kind of transition out of the athlete or athletics talk, but who are some athletes that you really admired, that you grew up around, that you felt were really talented? It doesn't have to be football only. It could be other athletes at your school that played baseball or basketball, but who are some people you remember being like, wow, yeah, there were some cold athletes from the town that I appreciate I had the opportunity to see?
Cold athletes from the town. Well, I mean, I'll say on a competitive basis, there were some guys this guy, Keaston Terry, he played at Blue Springs, you know, was a great athlete. Marcus Lucas, he played at Mizzou. Both of them played, you know, big time Division I. I think Keaston went to, like, KU. Marcus went to Mizzou. EJ Gaines is a good friend, too. Yeah, you know, EJ, you know, like I said, EJ's a big dog, played in the NFL. But those guys, you know, made me want – I was a newspaper guy, so, like, I took pride in the fact that, you know, somebody like EJ would play the same position. I'd see him get, like, you know, two picks, pick six. I'm like, God dang, like – I got cooked this week or something like that. Or, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, somebody like Marcus Lucas or Keaston goes off for like three touchdowns and you got him in like 2 weeks. It's like, all right, what can I do? And it's just that challenge competition. It's like not like envious. Like, it's like, hey, how can I step up to the plate and be just as good? So that way when the scouts and stuff like that come to the table and see that they put you on that same level. And I think that's why I think sports is a very good thing for a lot of, you know, youth and kids to – get you out of that envious kind of thing. It's like, rather than me hating on, like, hey, college has the best podcast, hey, what does college do well that I can step up in my podcast and do well as well, and then add whatever flavor and different things like that. So I think that's what I think sports really taught me. And then, like I said, competing against great, you know, athletes, and there's a lot of great Kansas City athletes you know, shoot, Alden Smith was at, you know, at Raytown. I mean, Raytown mm-hmm, playing mm-hmm. basketball too. Shoot, Raytown had a, you know, great team. Bishop Miege, Justin McKay at Bishop Miege was a big time guy. You know, all the guys at like I said, Fort Osage and all those. I mean, Kansas City has a lot of athletes, yeah. to be honest. I mean, yeah. I could say your name on a lot of them.
I feel like I definitely.
Darian Miller, shout out my dog too.
You know? I definitely need to have just like once or twice in the next, like maybe like a few episodes from now, I need to have some people on that are like super big in the Kansas City sports scene.
Yeah.
I only want to do that just because I feel like Kansas City deserves a little bit more respect around.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
From the town though. Yeah. I don't even think they need it from an outwardly perspective. I don't care if people in LA care about Kansas City, nothing like that.
Yeah.
But I feel like too many people that grew up in KC or young Bulls that grew up in KC
yeah.
don't appreciate the amount of talent that's has come out of the city or has been here and maybe unfortunately didn't make it all the way to the next level because of an injury or because of other things that are, you know,
yeah.
impacted.
And you say that, and it's actually now just maybe we'll have to talk about this probably off camera, but it's giving me an idea now that we might have to do like a former athlete kind of podcast with mm-hmm. just stories about the crazy,
that's,
you know,
hard.
Athletics and
yeah,
stuff like that. So
talk about
you ain't gonna hear too much about that here because you don't have to, you know, tune in for that. But
tune in for that.
But yeah, just be looking out for that because, like what you said, Kansas City has a lot of athletes and there's a lot of great stories. You know? Mm-hmm. Like I said, Tyronn Lue from Kansas City. Yeah.
Too many good stories.
You know what I'm saying? It's like we have athletes and, you know, even getting Kansas City Chiefs players and different things like that
anything.
To come and sit and
yeah,
talk.
There's so much power. And we got a lot of overseas basketball players that
yeah.
play out of town.
Crazy stories, too.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Crazy
like,
stories from overseas.
From overseas. It's like, you know, so it's like, you know, you having that. And like I said, it's a community sense. And mm-hmm. everybody be like, man, I remember him from high school. I wonder what he was doing. And then that thing, too, it allows – because I'll speak from in my sense of high school right now. It's like I get on Facebook now. We're in this age where, like, unfortunately, I'm seeing a lot of classmates just pass away.
Yeah.
Like depression and different things like that. It's because everybody feels so alone nowadays. It's like if you can have some type of sense of community to know that somebody's at least looking out for you, similar to that networking thing where it's like – even it's 5-6 people that are at least on Wednesdays, they're like, hey, he came up missing. Hey, you never know. Maybe he was at home depressed and mm-hmm. somebody's like, hey, do a wellness call and yeah. that saves you. You never know what
That's
things
real.
Can happen. So,
yeah,
no.
Yeah, there's a sense of empowerment that comes from nostalgia around like your past experiences.
Exactly.
That joy and happiness to your heart.
Exactly.
And then really just conversations learning about how to do that, because sometimes it's the reverse where thinking about the past can kind of bring a lot of pain and
exactly
put people down because they think they should have become something that they didn't become, and that becomes tough for athletes. But that might be good for a former athlete podcast talk.
Yeah,
so
for sure,
we'll
sure
talk about that later. That's
for sure
idea.
For sure.
So let's transition into, you know, exiting college. What was on your mind? What was the plan for your career path? I know you played overseas, so we can kind of skip over that a little bit. But what was the general idea of, like, when you're done with ball, what's next? Like, what were you thinking about?
Man, it's funny that you asked me that question now. When I graduated and after, you know, like I said, at that time I was doing well athletically. And, shoot, I had all the measurables, everything to basically play in the league. I was like, shoot, there ain't no other option. I'm going to the league, mama. Like, mm-hmm. played at a D1. We had, like I said, pro day, everything set up. But as life goes, didn't go that way. So things ended up going a little bit left. And, you know, pro day didn't get to go the way I wanted it to go because I didn't even get to have one. And so now I was like, okay, what am I going to do? And it was still football in a sense because obviously it ended up going back to Europe. But I didn't really have a plan of what else besides football because I had just been in this identity form for honestly up until 2019. Really, football was really my identity because mm-hmm. most people would even ask me, it's like, what are you besides football? It's like, well, I mean, I play football in high school, I play football in college, I play football now for a profession. I mean, it just so happens to be
football.
Yeah, football, you know what I mean? So it's like, but I didn't have an identity outside of it. And so that's what I think was a issue. But I started, as I got older and like I said, went to Europe and started seeing the world and experiencing things, that's when I was like, yeah, I want to be more than just football. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have, coming out of college, no plan besides
football.
Ball. Right. But then as I got older, started seeing that maybe this football thing might not happen. But then, like I said, the odd circumstance of playing overseas brought me to that understanding that, yeah, I like this football. Yeah, it's opening to me to opportunities. But at the same time, too, this is, you don't want this to be when people come to your funeral, man, he was one hell of a ball player.
Right. Yep. Like, and that's it.
And that's it. Mm-hmm. Man, oh, he had six picks.
You might as well just delete Richard and just put ball.
Exactly. Put my jersey number. Right. You know what I mean? Yeah. And people don't understand that. And that's what, like you said, it's like for, especially for a lot of former athletes, is when people come to your funeral, what are they going to say about you? You had 40? Mm-hmm. You had 50? That's the best thing they can say about you?
And I think that's crazy you're bringing that up, because I'm just thinking about a lot of people I grew up with where I see them get pissed on Facebook when somebody's like tags them about something football, but that's not their thing anymore.
Yeah.
Basketball, and that's not their thing anymore. Or at least that's their, that was the identity that they identify with for so long, and now they're in a kind of a blur trying to navigate
exactly
where's next. And you can see the anger in their heart, their yeah eyes, and their responses, or like their attempt at trying to ignore mm-hmm that conversation, because it brings like a sense of
and
fear.
And the thing is that it's unfortunate when people get angry mm-hmm rather than simply saying that that is who you were. Like mm-hmm you had to become, like I had to be a football player in order to have the mental fortitude to be able to go through this whole crypto stuff and deal with having to do the mundane over and over and over. The practice sense of what I was on the field is the same thing now that I'm applying to the studying with the books and going to these networking that's events, right, right, because game day is going to be whenever I, you know, say have a speaking event, whenever I have, you know, I'm working on a project, whenever, you know, saying the, you know, the tech paycheck comes through and stuff like that. It's like, that's the game day, but you have to practice all the way through. And like I said, for yourself, it's like having those podcasts where it's just like maybe some don't get hits, but those ones that do get hits, it's like, all right, that's the game day. Mm-hmm. But the whole process in between of setting up the camera, doing the mic checks, having to be like, oh, man, damn, I have to do redo a whole other episode again because of the fact of the stuff messed up. You could be woe is me, but rather you're like, all right, you know what? I get another opportunity to be better. Mm-hmm. Now it changes your whole concept on the track. So.
And it's all about perspective and how you apply your past life to your new life and like the experiences from then to now. I mean,
yeah,
even while you were saying that, it's like, oh, the audio messed up. I was like, damn, I twisted my ankle on the field, so I missed the next three games. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Or shit, I don't have a laptop right now, so I can't post content for the next 4 weeks because my phone's broken, my laptop broke. It's like, okay, that's just a ACL tear.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? You out for the season. So now it's like get in rehab, get your money together. Because now when, like I said, I think as athletes, and that's why a lot of former athletes do well in business and success and entrepreneurship, is if you can just shift it to, damn, my phone broke for the next 4 weeks, torn ACL. All right, got to get in rehab. Rehab is you going to get the money right so that way you can be able to go get a phone so that way you can get back faster.
100%.
Same concept. So
perspective, principles, and the ability to like have a mindset shift or application shift, I guess.
Exactly.
Language sounds best.
Whichever one, man.
Okay, so 2019 comes around.
Yep.
Is it 2019, end of 2019, when the pandemic's getting ready to hit, where you're kind of having a mindset shift, or is it like before the pandemic, then the pandemic hits and everything like kind of comes to a halt, I guess, and now you have to really lock in, make a decision,
mm-hmm,
plus what we're going to transition into the field that you're in, you know, with
yeah
Web3 and crypto and the big boom during the pandemic. So
yeah,
just
exactly.
Talk about that 2019-2020 period mentally for you, like what happened, what shifts happened, and how did that lead you to like what you're working on today in 2023?
Okay, so honestly, 2019, I came back from Germany, final season. Like I said, just won a championship, playing probably the best ball at the time. My thought process at the time, I'm going back to Europe probably to set up shop.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there's no inkling of Corona at the time.
Right.
So I'm like, all right, cool. I'm going through contracts. 2020 starts up, and that's when we started getting the word that there was something going on early start of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Funny thing is, also at that same time, the Chiefs are in the playoffs
mm-hmm
and Super Bowl. So really in Kansas City, we're really not thinking about it because we're like,
at all.
We're like, oh, yeah, you know, we but might win.
I was around a million people at Paramount. Like, come on now.
That's the funny thing. It's like people that like thinking about time-wise,
mm-hmm,
Corona was kind of starting to do its thing. As the Chiefs won the Super Bowl, the last major thing was the parade.
Because
mm-hmm right after that, everything got shut down.
Immediately, like maybe 3 weeks. Yeah.
Not even that. Probably, I think maybe like a week or so after, because mm-hmm the Super Bowl is what, like the second week?
Yeah, yeah.
And then now, a week or so after, March, everything was shut down. So mm-hmm maybe 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm
then now, when that happened, then we're locked in. At the time, I was working at Amazon, start of the year. So I was at a place where I was an essential worker, But I didn't even know what was going on. So I'm going to Amazon.
You didn't even know what an essential worker was.
Exactly. So I'm like, everybody else shut down, but we still got to go work. So that's when I started understanding that the world was really changing. Mm. So that's when I think that the mindset thing started to look at, like, I started looking like, okay, if the world shuts down, I need to be an essential worker. I wasn't thinking even business yet. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, the goal is be an essential worker. So that way, worst come to worst, you can always have a job. But then I started looking to, okay, I'm working for money, but like something's not adding up. Like there was this weird, like, you know, prices were going up and stuff like that. We were getting the stimulus checks, but stuff seemed too weird, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Getting checks in the mail for nothing. And unemployment, people were making more money than people that were making money. So it was like everything for me, just like I started just questioning stuff. So that's why I think like that's when things started happening, was as I started to see that shift from workers to essential workers to people fighting for ramen noodles, toilet paper. I was like, as chaos starts happening, weird things start going on. You need to start paying attention. So mm-hmm. then now I was like, okay, how can I start changing my mindset to how can I start making money when I'm at home or I'm not working or I'm off the clock? That's when I started looking into the investing side of things. Stocks, real estate was all right, but I was like, it's kind of far-fetched. Real estate's more expensive. Stocks, just it's too many factors that play into the thing. So I was like, what's new? Crypto, Bitcoin, and Ethereum, and those things like that at the time were the newest thing.
Right?
Exactly. And they were, at the time, booming because they weren't understood, but now the prices were just starting to radically go up, but nobody really understood. So I got into it, and I was like, oh, yeah. I bought, I think, Binance at the time. Binance, I think, was the number three coin. It's like 80-something bucks. I bought like three of them, so like 240. Mm-hmm. First couple of weeks, you know, I'm just watching every day, like a little crack addict.
Yeah, like most people want to
get. Yeah, yeah. So then now I woke up one morning and my stuff from 240 goes to like 6-something. So now I'm like, hold on.
You were like, oh, I understand value.
That's when like my, and that's when the click was like, so technically I could cash this out, tripled my money, and I didn't do a thing. Mm-hmm. All I did was get in something a little bit before everybody else.
Right time. Right.
So then that's when like my mindset really started changing for the investing side of things. And then I started, like I said, going down the rabbit hole of why is Bitcoin the way it is, and why does it make more sense? Why are all the smart people going towards this stuff? You know, why are everybody going away from websites and going towards this Web3 stuff? So then that's what got me down that rabbit hole. And then now NFTs and all these other things started coming out, and it was that whole bull run. So I'm like, at that time, it's like euphoria. You're just like, holy shit, is this never going to end? You just, but then now it's like, as I was learning all these things, I was also preparing myself that most people don't understand this, and that's why it's just booming like this. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a fall.
There's going to be a huge fall because everybody's going to have a new opinion or their new experience or start to understand that they shouldn't have put $700,000 into Dogecoin.
Exactly. Right? So now it's like, as I started understanding that, that's when I was like, especially in the Black community, I noticed, we're not even talking about it. Mm-hmm. $68,000. I was at the National Society of Black Engineers. I got sent out to Anaheim. This was last year.
Yeah, I remember you talking about that. Yeah, go ahead.
I went out there. Not a soul was talking about cryptocurrency, Web3, Bitcoin, or anything. Mm-hmm. Not talking about integrating it. Not talking about software development in it. Not talking about engineering in it. None of it. That's a problem. When your next generation is not talking about the biggest innovation to come since the internet, essentially. That's a problem. That's going to put you back a couple years. And especially when tech's involved, it's going to put you back a couple hundred years if you mess around. Mm-hmm. So like for me, I was just like, all right, if I can focus on this so well, just like I did football, and focus on being the best that steps out on the field, which now is just when I speak with people, there's no reason why I can't get to a Bezos or Elon Musk level, not to say billions and billions of dollars, but
just understanding the amount of value or power that you can create in a community.
Exactly.
Based off information and understanding it. And
exactly.
How to disseminate it. Right?
And educating it. Because like at the end of the day, it wasn't really about me. It's if I can get my community and more people understanding that this stuff is not as scary as what it is, it brings value and trust in myself, but then also it now exposes people to the opportunities that they can create with this new technology.
And I want to dive into the last thing, two things you said in terms of opportunities they can create, and it's not as scary as it seems.
Yeah, we can definitely dive into that.
Before we dive into that, I want to do a quick definition breakdown.
Yeah.
Go ahead and just explain Web3 in like the simplest terms.
Yep.
And then do the same thing for NFTs and blockchain.
Okay.
These are like the three words that people hear a lot.
Yeah.
So just having a baseline understanding, because they'll have to go do their own Google search after
yep,
this.
But yep, like, yep. Just you get know, you baseline. Curious. Yep. Go ahead. All right. So Web3, we'll start with that one. So what I do with the Web3 is just explain the evolution or the growing up stages of the internet. So to start, Web1 is the original internet, where it's very basic. You could only just post like newspaper ads. It cost a bunch of money to use the internet. This was like the archaic version of the internet. You couldn't interact. You couldn't do anything with it. But then now the Web 2 version of the internet came around, and that's everything that we do now. Websites, you could program things, you could interact, you could watch videos, you could download, you could stream. Everything that we're doing now is Web 2. Web 3 is essentially now the decentralization of all the information that we have now in Web 2. When we say decentralization, it's going from Google, Amazon, Facebook, all these big time corporations that make most of their money from ad revenue of selling your data and telling who to, who, you know, which products to sell to. Now we're moving to putting the information back in people's hands, or in the concept of Bitcoin, putting value and money back in people's hands away from banks. And the fact that now when you have people, innovation can be able to move more seamlessly when you don't have as much constrictions and regulations
where every one company owns everything. I forgot the word. It
monopolization.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so basically that's what Web3 is. So it's just basically the evolution of, now we have, like I said, cryptocurrencies, we have decentralized wallets, decentralized finance, AI is in Web3 as well, you know, with ChatGPT and different things like that. For instance, what else can fall into that space? You know, smart contracts. Basically you can program something to be able to do something in the future. So for instance, if I say, hey, I'm going to give you a loan for $100,000, you know, or simply something as this, you know, it could be a smart contract that this code, if it's scanned now, it allows you into the parking garage that's here. So it's basically a program that's put into the code that allows you to do something in the future or continue to do.
It's like an elevated thing, or a future, like a next level up of RFIDs. Basically.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's just like we're doing these things, QR codes. It's just basically now, if a QR code allows you access into a hotel, but then I say that an NFT allows you access into a hotel.
Gotcha.
Not too much of a difference. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're asking about blockchain. So blockchain is basically decentralized ledger technology. So essentially in blockchain, the simplest way I put it is, each thing is put into a distinct block of data. So now you have that block of data that now, for instance, me and you want to transfer $20. It would now go to the network. Hey, I want to get some shirt from you for $20. It'll validate on both sides. Hey, do they both have the said goods? Mm-hmm. They'll say yes. They'll put it into a block. And then now it'll basically be a race on who can verify this block first. The block is basically a bunch of randomized numbers, which now gets into the whole algorithm side of things, right, and the technicals. But
that's definitely a few YouTube 101s that you need to watch for a few hours for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. But it gets into, like I said, basically it's stamped with a random number. And now the network is validating who can pick that number first. And then now once it's done, validated, put onto the blockchain. And then now that blockchain concept comes, every block of data is connected in a chain, which is unbreakable. And the only way to change it is you have to have majority of the network, basically, which is an energy
to agree,
it, which is consensus. So obviously it gets more, you know, deeper in detail and different things like that. But basically blockchain is chains of blocks of data, transactions, like I said, NFTs or whatever it may be, that are locked, linked together. And then now, because of the fact that they're immutable, and the only way you can change it is if you own the whole network or 51% of it, then you can be able to do that. So that's basically what blockchain in a kind of
super quick
way for you to understand.
So speak to most individuals thinking about crypto as a get rich quick scheme or a scam. Kind of maybe try to
compare it to something.
Maybe not compare. You can do that as well. But maybe I guess argue against that. I guess give a reason like why it's not a scam or why people think it's a scam, and then break down why it's not. Okay. If that makes sense.
Yeah. So one of the biggest things that one of the biggest myths, I'd say, in cryptocurrency is that all of the transactions are for criminals, or most crime is done in cryptocurrency.
Because they were the first ones to
Because they're the first one to do it.
Right.
But if we go back to history, people have been doing crime with cash. Most cash is where most crime is done, because the most anonymous. Because if you want to really break it down, blockchain is more trackable than cash is.
Right.
So if I'm a criminal, I'm not going to do it on blockchain. Mm-hmm. I'll do it in cash.
Cash, right.
Which we've been doing for hundreds of years. And as we know, with embezzling and all this other stuff has been going on. But with blockchain, it's more immutable in the fact that, for instance, if a criminal gets away with doing something once, I can be able to see if it goes to either the same wallet or same region or whatever it is through VPN. I can be able to track that. So
yeah. Just look at all the people during this time period who got caught up actually scamming on the blockchain, like in general. Like the FBI went and found that information, so it's obviously traceable.
Exactly.
Might take a little longer.
It may take a little longer, but at the same time, too, like at some point, it's like you can get away with it once. But now, like with cash, it's like it gets to the point where it's like if you do it right enough, you can be able to scam for years.
Mm-hmm.
In cash.
Shout out to all them boys in Chicago and Detroit.
Hey, they crack. Like I said, the financial system we have, they cracking cards. How many people get emails all the time? Hey, bro, you got a debit card, I can turn your $20 into $20,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's the financial system that we have now. That's no blockchain.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like if we want to go towards like a more secure side of things, I just simply tell people is this. Blockchain and decentralized ledger technology is the most advanced technology that we have, period, right now. My personal bet is this. I don't worry about the price. I simply say this. Would you not want to have the most efficient technology on the planet when it comes to safeguarding your money or your information? That's it. It's like, would you not want to have, if you're going from here, you know, let's say, for instance, you're going from California to New York.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you want to have the fastest car, the most efficient car, best gas efficiency and all this other stuff?
My boy talking about vibranium in this motherfucker.
You know what I mean? It's like, but at the end of the day, it's like, you know, it just comes down to efficiency. We talked about it a little earlier. It's like, that's like me sitting in a horse and stable or horse carriage and be like, yeah, I'm going to travel across the country.
Mm-hmm.
How long is it going to take you?
Right.
Oh, I love to travel or go across Europe, but I want to do it on a train. How far are you going to go? But if I flew, I would get to that many more countries, that many faster, so I can visit 3-4 countries in one day if I do it right. Compared to, I got to take Amtrak, I got to go here, I got to go there, and all this other stuff. So it's like, your efficiency always wins.
Yeah, and on top of that, like, just with that comparison, and I think it can apply to pretty much anything, but definitely this topic, is there's trade-offs,
mm-hmm.
there's risks, but with everything. You know
exactly.
What I'm saying? So it's like, sure, are there some trade-offs, like some might be efficient, but maybe there's something else. I can't bring it up because I'm not too versed in the space, but
yeah.
Like I'm sure there's something in the space that's a trade-off if you switch out, you know, crypto or Bitcoin or something like that for, you know,
hey, like
your bank account or something
like prime
that,
example,
right?
Like for instance, there's no reason on God's green earth that in 2023 that it should take 3 to 5 business days to get your money back, in all honesty, because if you have my money and I have my money, or the bank is supposedly supposed to have my money, why is it 3 to 5 days need to happen? But with the banking system, the way it's set up, it has to take 3 to 5 days because they have to get the money from all these different other areas because it's never in one place.
Mm-hmm.
Because banks understand that money sitting in one place is dead.
Mm-hmm.
But we think that leaving money in one place is a great thing. Oh, we're saving for the future.
Mm-hmm.
The people that make money don't keep money in one place. That should tell you everything. It's like, you know, it's like somebody being like, hey, this is a great house. This is a great neighborhood. Why don't you stay in it? You know what I mean? It's like, if it's such a great neighborhood, why don't you stay in it? You stay over here with the gated community. But you're telling me this is such a great neighborhood as a real estate agent or whatever. Wouldn't you stay in this absolutely lush 5-star, whatever it is? Nah, but you stay 40 minutes away. Actions speak louder than words. So that's the kind of things that like I looked into when it was like, just looking at the facts.
Right.
You know.
So speaking of like, let's just say high income individuals that do have that income or let's say they need to allocate their money somewhere. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that people are scared to put their money into Bitcoin or other, you know, let's say validated cryptocurrencies? Because
yeah.
There's thousands out there.
Exactly.
There's Bitcoin and there's some other shit.
Yeah, there's everything
so
else on the moon.
In regards to validated cryptocurrencies that,
yeah.
You know, are valid.
Exactly.
Why do you think people are fearful of putting their money there versus in the stock market or somewhere else? Or not even like versus, because you can still have your money in the stock market. But why do you think people are averse to putting their money in those spaces?
I think that the reason why people are averse to going into those spaces is because, one, they haven't done enough research on it. That's why when you hear a lot of Web3 people talk about they'll say, do your own research. Mm-hmm. Because once you do the research, it makes more sense. I won't put my money into Apple if I've never seen an Apple iPhone. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So now, like I said, with Apple products, I have the trust. But now with Bitcoin or Ethereum, it's hard to grasp because most of the stuff is digital. Mm-hmm. And then now it's like, okay, it goes up and down in price too. So now it's digital. I don't really get, in most cases, I don't get something tangible. Mm-hmm. And then now the thing that I get goes up and down in price. On top of the fact that me not understanding it, it's like, nah, that's too much. So I think that most of the time that for people, it's the fact that there's so many what ifs that in an already built on what if world, it's like, I can't afford any more what ifs, especially with my hard earned money.
So would you say it's more of a patience thing, like a next generation thing where it's just going to take time because people understand the stock market, people understand real estate because people have been doing it for the past 400 years. So it's like, or it's not 400, but you get what I'm saying.
For a hot minute.
So do you think this is something that's growing, building, and it's just, I'm not saying that people shouldn't take action, but I'm just looking at large scale adoption. Are you thinking that it might just be ignorance, but as people begin to understand it, be educated by it, see the value from different generations, that eventually a generation, you know, a few below us will adopt it like full time as a definite and comfortable and confident investment strategy in terms of long term.
Not even investment only,
because, you know, we are talking about utilizing Bitcoin or, you know, cryptocurrency instead of putting all our money in the bank is 50-50.
I think that I think it's going to be a combination of things. I think it's going to be patience, but at the same time, too, I think right now, as we're seeing now, America is really on a ticking time clock.
Right.
When it comes to the dollar and its validation across the world. So as much as we want to say time, it's like the time has really been ticking since ever since we got away from the gold standard. Mm-hmm. Ever since we got away from money actually having rules, the clock started ticking. Because then now when we were in charge of how money was printed, but we had no rules to how money was printed, people didn't realize that the clock is ticking. And when you start realizing that, all right, my money, the way I save it, is not making sense. People say that inflation is 5 or 6%. You go to the grocery store. Eggs went up 200, 300, 400% in months. So I think that pain and pleasure thing is going to get to the point where people that get into it early are going to have the pleasure of, oh, I see how this works. I made a bunch of money off Dogecoin or whatever it is, and I was able to profit from it. Pleasure. But then the pain of other people is when 401ks and retirement funds or banks completely collapse and people can't access their money, they're going to look for something that makes sense. Right now, like I said, China is leading, you know, the head of, like, you know, the new currency, but most people aren't going to trust China. They already see what they're doing with them.
Right.
So then now I'll most likely go to something that makes more sense. Gold. Like I said, I always tell people, like, it's not only just Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. Look at what's done in history. Gold has been end all be all for the last 5,000 years. So looking at those concepts and then seeing, all right, what other things work kind of like gold? Can you not print those things? All right, real estate makes sense because you can't print houses. Government's great, can't print houses. Hey, I'm a great artist. You can't print my art. That IP, that's why, like, IP, or like I said, creating value with the podcast like this. You have to find different ways to acquire skills. Most people are worried about money. Acquire skills, everything else is going to fall into place. Because we're in a place of, like, society right now to where we can't have chaos. There's no way that most people want order. Most people.
Yeah.
Most people like going to, like I said, having a job, knowing they can go outside, get in their car. We like
structure,
order.
Structure. Yeah.
But now,
being able to have a decent understanding of what's going to happen tomorrow.
Exactly. Yeah. So then now, like I said, we'll get to a point where, all right, we'll sit here as Americans. We'll be like, okay, saving my money doesn't make sense. Putting my money in a bank doesn't make sense. What do I trust? Well, I trust my iPhone. It doesn't matter if I'm black, white, Puerto Rican, Asian. My iPhone's going to work as long as I charge it. And there's no technical problem. So that's why I tell people that tech is the next thing that's going to make sense, because me and you will trust a text message. If I say, hey, bro, I got an iPhone, and I send you a text and it's green bubbles, you can be like, this lying motherfucker. Because you can trust, you know what I'm saying? It's something you can trust. You can't scam it. It's the software. But then now if I send you a text, I'm like, hey, FaceTime me. And you see a blue check or blue, what's it called? You'll be like, okay, that's verification to let me know that he can FaceTime.
Yeah, iPhone, right.
Same concept with money. Now if I trust money or Bitcoin, or I know that me and you are holding Bitcoin or whatever it is, and I'm like, hey, bro, Bitcoin's at $30,000. If I pay you 0.0 whatever it is for a podcast session or whatever it is, and it equates to $2,000 a month, which is according to your standards, is that okay?
most people would be like, shit, $2,000 is $2,000. I don't give a damn. Send it to my Cash App. I'll put it into my, what's it called? Boom. Easy. So then now it's like, okay, if I can do that, why do I need a bank? Why do I need, like I said, a credit union or whatever? If I can get on Cash App, manage my money, put everything on auto pay, I don't need a bank to do that. You don't grow my money. You invest my money and charge 30% interest, but give me 0.001. Bro, if we was in the streets, we fight. You know what I mean? So it's like, I think that's that pain and pleasure thing that's going to kind of just navigate people through this whole space.
What would you say for somebody who, say they do their investigation, they understand the space, they believe in it.
Mm-hmm.
What's like the next step to like, you know, making that a part of your life, I guess you could say, whether it's from an investment point of view or whether it's from a just utilization, like utility on a day-to-day basis in your life, whether it's buying groceries or this or that or whatever, like how would you recommend people slowly integrate like, I want to always say Bitcoin just because it's the only one that everyone kind of has some confidence around for
just
sure.
Just like the Web3, how can they get exposed to the Web3 space?
Yeah.
I would say, like I said, one.
But I do want to speak to it directly right now, not so much from a Web3's integration into tech or iPhones or podcasts, but money day-to-day life. Yeah,
exactly. What I would say is this. First thing first, get a little skin in the game. Whether it's you can get as much, as little as a dollar worth of Bitcoin. Put it in there, Cash App, Venmo, PayPal, what else? Robinhood, all these other places. Put like $1, $2, $20, whatever you can afford. Whatever, if you lost it today, you wouldn't care. That's investing. That's what investing should be. If you lost it, you wouldn't care. So I would say do that and then watch it. And then just remember at the end of the day, there's no more coming out. People are going to lose theirs. The value is going to continue to go up. Other places are going to start to adopt it. There's more places are going to start accepting it. What's that going to do to the amount that you have? Don't sell it or whatever. Just watch it. And then just think to yourself that there's no more coming out. There's only two ways to get this thing. And as everything continues to get printed into oblivion, it makes your stuff more valuable. That's one of the things I would say. So doing your research to get to that understanding first, get a little bit so that way you can understand it. Because as long as you're standing on the outside being like, oh, it doesn't make sense. Put $2 in there. When your $2 goes to $2.50 or whatever it is, ask yourself why.
And then what would you say, like, individuals who are putting, like, you know, got a lot of capital and they're putting, like, 40%, 50%, 60% of their assets into Bitcoin and then distributing the rest into, let's say, stocks or real estate, things of that nature, like, and then obviously you have, like, cash that you use on a day-to-day basis. I guess I'm wondering,
what's the percentage? Like,
what's the point? What's the point? Aside from, I mean, I get the point from a perspective of, like, you actually have your money, like it's there. Mm-hmm. I understand the efficiency standpoint. Yeah. But right now, it's like you see integration in certain places, but you just I just don't see that many options to be able to buy T-shirts, groceries, this, buy my kids school packs, like pay for their education to UMKC, go buy an Apple Watch, get my shoes, get my clients to pay me this way. You know what I'm saying? I don't see too many, like, use cases for Bitcoin in that yet. So I guess, like, for the common person, it would be primarily just to get the skin in the game, which I understand that, to like buy, and then maybe as a small investment strategy, like if they're going to play the long-term game, which most people aren't. So I guess I just struggle to see the utility today, or if it's not about today, it's about the tomorrow when it comes to crypto.
I think right now the utility problem is we don't have the people, but the creativity hasn't come yet to adoption. Like I said, when you have people like yourself that now, for instance, you have a podcast, and then now you say, all right, I'm going to get my podcast services, but maybe this one little piece of my podcast service I'm going to have for only Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. Or maybe I do discounted rates for Bitcoin, because I understand the concept of, yeah, I may be taking a loss per se on Bitcoin, but technically my Bitcoin can go up 50% just within the last few months. So technically, if I got a payment in Bitcoin last year, by all technicalities, my Bitcoin would be up 50% of 2023. So now when you start realizing that, well, maybe I can just start taking in on certain payments. Maybe, like I said, I'm a wings place. Maybe I have a special flavor of buffalo sauce that I offer for only in Bitcoin. Just little ways you can figure out how to, like I said, either acquire Bitcoin or earn it. There's different, like I said, there's shopping things where you earn money back in Bitcoin. Cash App has a thing where you swipe your card and you can earn. There's different type of creative ways, but I think that the most creative people haven't gotten to it. When Nike said that you can get cash back in Bitcoin, that's when people will be like, oh, okay, yeah. But Nike doesn't have an incentive to do it right now. Why? Because they're with the dollar. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like, we're not going to play on. They're doing little things, like you said, playing in Web3 and stuff like that. But when Nike says, you know what, hey, we want to go to, if you pay in Bitcoin, you get 10% off. Changes how people look at Bitcoin.
Right.
Because now I'm like, well, technically, even if Bitcoin goes up or down, I can still buy this. And
so what's the incentive for the company, though?
The incentive for the company is the fact that now if you have it, like, for instance, as a trust, maybe, for instance, you only have your all your on-sale stuff is sold in Bitcoin. So now it'd be on sale, which technically you'd be selling for a quote-unquote loss. But now if you've acquired this Bitcoin at $27,000, right? And you just, all these things were acquired at 27. But now Bitcoin goes up to 40-something thousand dollars. How much has all that appreciated? How much has all that appreciated over time? So now you can acquire money that now maybe you're having a down month. You can be able to pay for payroll or do those type of things because now you have an appreciating asset similar to acquiring gold.
So what's the speed of pulling Bitcoin out and being able to utilize it tomorrow look like? You know how sometimes you sell a stock or something might take like a few days or something for your cash to come in. So if somebody sells Bitcoin, I guess what's the speed of that look like? Because at the end of the day, like you said, if a company does that, they take it all in Bitcoin and then they, you know, they're just holding it or whatever. And then if they're not going to purchase whatever they need to purchase or pay payroll in Bitcoin, they're obviously going to have to transfer it into USD.
Yep.
So like how quick does that happen? Do they lose money when they do that? Like,
yeah. So that's what, like I said, that's where the education start comes very in handy. So with Bitcoin, obviously, since it's open source, and when you truly own your keys, like I said, not having yourself on Cash App or whatever, because a certain amount, they're going to say it's however many days or whatever it might be. If you truly own your keys, you can be able to liquidate immediately from the network.
And you can do that with physical hardware where you store your cash, or you can do that on digital wallets.
Exactly. So you want to have a hardware wallet. That's where you truly own your keys. So if I have $50,000 in Bitcoin on my hardware wallet, and I'm like, okay, I need $20,000 to go buy this car, I would simply send that to whether it's my Cash App or whatever. Now, the thing is that the on-ramping part or depositing part is the hard part, because now it has to be, maybe it's on your bank that says, oh, well, you got $20,000 deposited in your, because now
wait.
Everything.
Right, right. See, again, it goes back into the banking process where you got to wait for the cash to actually.
So it may not be on the Bitcoin and the network.
That might go through, but the processing at the bank might still be 5 to 6 days.
Exactly. But if you're at a big enough bank and you know, maybe, like you say, you're dealing bigger deposits, they may not just wink anything at it. It may just be another deposit. So then now figuring out those ways, and that's why I think that figuring out a way to seamlessly take out that part, because now it's like, okay, if it's just software, and I'm a business, like a nonprofit, and I took donations in Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, and we had a down month on donations, but Bitcoin is up, and I want to liquidate those assets, it shouldn't be on the fact that my bank doesn't know anything about cryptocurrency, that I can't get this $30,000 to be able to make payroll.
Right.
It should be on the fact that you guys are behind. And that's why I think that those type of things are going to be like, when people are going to be like, okay, this makes more sense. It's like, nothing's happening here. They got donations for breast cancer. Why are we holding their money? It's for young kids in Africa. Why are we holding the money? Well, the bank needs to make sure that, really? You know what I mean? So it's like those type of things. I think that once people start seeing that, and then you basically have to force their hand, more or less. And that's the thing, is that once more people start accepting it, car dealerships, dentists, and whatever it is, you're going to have to make it a lot easier for people to get on there. So I think that, you know, over time, you know, once people start realizing that it's already here, it makes a lot of sense. I just couple it with the things that we've already done, like I said, with real estate, you know, with, you know, stocks and those different type of things. I'm not an end all to be all. I'm not a Bitcoin maximalist to the end of days. I think that decentralization is not only Bitcoin, Ethereum, Cardano, XRP, all those things, but it has to make sense. You know,
makes sense,
people. If I can go to AMC and buy, you know, a movie ticket with Dogecoin, hey, Dogecoin to the moon then.
Right.
Why not? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I bought it for a couple cents, but now AMC uses it, and shoot, you know, IMAX uses it. And now if I can go watch the new Avatar in IMAX because I paid some Dogecoin, who is that stupid money? No, I went to watch a movie and I got the actual experience from it.
Right.
So I think it's gonna come.
And I'm wondering, is like I don't even know how to ask that question, so we'll skip over that because I don't know how to necessarily ask it in a way that's valuable. But what I would like to do is kind of transition into Dash in between.
Yeah.
Break down just give us your business bio. Like, you know, if someone was, you know, to see Dash in between, what do you want them to think from a branding perspective? And then outside of that, just kind of give a description of what you're trying to do.
Man, it's funny. I think the dash in between is like a morphing organism. Like it constantly keeps changing. What it started off, obviously, a consultation, creative directing, education, and Web3. When I started seeing that just talking about that isn't going to get people into it, it morphed into me doing, you know, laser engraving and resin art to be able to morph that physical sense and how people can hold those things to tailor it to the technology. So I think that what I would do to describe my business is essentially a creative, I would say almost like an agency, but basically a creative entity that is just using innovative technology to better educate people on what is to come and what's already here. So that's essentially what I would kind of describe it. At the end of the day, it's just trying to show people that, you know, technology is not something to be afraid of if you properly educate yourself on it. It's actually something that, like I said, with ChatGPT and all the stuff that's coming out,
can empower you, can be a resource, can be a tool, right?
Man, it can really take off. So I think that's what my business focus is to be. Right now, like I said, it just focuses on, like I said, sitting down with businesses, you know, figuring out, you know, where you could possibly put in Web3, why it would make sense in your business. Like I said, most people think that it's always super expensive to get into the space. It's nothing, but you can start getting a Web3, but just getting a Bitcoin wallet and accepting it. That's the first entry to it. So, like, the main thing is just getting people to understand that entry into it is not as wildly expensive or whatever it is. You can start as low as $1, and you can get in at $1 million. It doesn't really matter, but the first thing is just, like I said, education, and that's what I want to focus on.
So, side note, what's, like, the difference between buying, like, a fractional share of Bitcoin versus just buying a whole share, I guess Bitcoin. You could say, like, what would be, is there, outside of it just being more money for the person to buy in and more money that could potentially grow, so that's obvious. But, like, is there anything else that's different? Like, do they have to use different a different app or a different thing to be able to buy fractional shares? Or if they buy fractional shares, are there any downfalls? Or is it the same thing as buying, like, a full share? It's just less money.
Nah, it's just and that's a great question. I think that a lot of people always see Bitcoin. They're like, oh, 27,000, we got to have 20. No, it's not. Bitcoin works in the fact of this. Just on the math side of things, there's 21 million Bitcoin in total. That's full Bitcoin, whole things. Each one breaks down into 100 million things called Satoshis. So that's the smaller versions of Bitcoin. Now, essentially, that's like how I compare it to how there's 100 pennies in a dollar or $100 in a $100 bill or whatever. It's just the same fractionalization. So if Bitcoin's at 27,000, I can be able to buy 0.00000, however many zeros, and then one of that 27,000. And essentially now what you're doing is just accumulating enough, because 100 million Satoshis equals a Bitcoin, no matter what. It's always going to equal a Bitcoin. 100 pennies is always going to equal a dollar. So the main thing is that it doesn't change how you buy in. If anything, that's why they say buy the dip, because now you're just buying the same thing you wanted for less. Mm-hmm. So I say, you know, dollar cost average is basically where you just take, whether it's 10 bucks, 20 bucks. Shit, if you didn't have anything to do that week, don't do it. Wait till next week, or wait till it dips a little bit. If you see everything's popping off and you're like, oh man, Bitcoin's at 33,000, don't go and take 300 bucks that you just got or whatever and go buy the whole thing with the 300. Watch it, wait, let it dip a little bit, buy 100 bucks here. If it goes up a little bit, buy 20 bucks. If it dips down, it'll go buy 50. And then now you spread out how you want to invest that that 300.
It sounds like this, when just like if someone's investing in a stock market, like the healthy ways to invest in the stock market apply to crypto.
Same thing, man.
Gotcha. Except you're just investing in something that you may not have as much information or confidence around in the past. But in terms of tools or the process is very similar.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
That's why I tell people, it's like when people are like, whoa, I feel bad for the people that bought Bitcoin at 68,000. Yeah, I do too. Because if you were smart and you had 68,000 to blow, you would have bought maybe 1,000 or 2,000 at the top, watched it dip to like 50 some, bought 2,000 or whatever, watched it completely crash to 16K, bought a whole thing or maybe one or two, then now you'd be up. couple bands. Right. You
just
know what I mean?
Just that patience process, knowing what you can and can't lose, and knowing that you're in it for the long term, just like the stock market.
Exactly.
It's like anybody says, it's only gambling when you don't understand it and when you didn't have that money to lose in the first place.
Exactly.
So everyone's like, stock market's just gambling or real estate's just gambling. It's like, no, it's not. If you understand what you're investing in, you believe, and you know it has value, and you're pretty confident that when you look back at the statistics that it's continuously growing over time,
exactly,
and you're just patient, you don't overdo it. It's the same thing with fucking food or anything else in life.
Yeah.
You can overeat or you can just eat just enough to satisfy your energy and your needs over time, and you'll continue to get stronger, continue to live longer, continue to have your health benefits, just as long as you're consistent in that compounding interest of good decisions and patient decisions. So it really just applies to everything. Just the tool is different, or maybe the resource is different.
And that's why I say, man, like, I just tell people, like, nothing's really changed. Like I said, when I talk about, like, NFTs and crypto, I'm like, dude, this Amex gives Amex points. If they called it cryptocurrency, you'd be like, oh, I get it.
Right.
You can use your points at hotels. You can use your points at Southwest. Can't use your Mizuma Credit Union points because they don't have any, because they don't have partnerships.
Right.
Well, because Amex is trusted and has partnerships, they accept their points. The points are useless anywhere else.
Valid.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like,
shout out to the Amex lounges. The little, what are they called? I forgot. They have the Centurion.
I gotta get my lounges. Points up so I can get in that day.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I said, and that's an NFT. If you're not up, you can't get in.
Yep.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's like,
and the same. Yeah, same application applies. You gotta put some skin in the game. You got to use that.
You ain't spend enough bread with Amex?
You ain't going to get the benefits.
You're not part of the club.
Yeah, you didn't spend enough bread with, I don't know, fucking Ape, what was it? Ape Yacht Club.
Ignored Ape Yacht Club?
Yeah, then you ain't going to get none of their benefits.
You ain't going to get on the yacht.
Yep.
You ain't going to talk to Tom Brady anymore.
It's just really just gang membership. You dig
me? That's it, dog.
You ain't part of the gang, then you
built by the community.
Right, exactly, and in a healthy way.
Exactly. Now it's like, hey, you know, hey, we want to help, you know, young black kids, young black and brown kids that are not found on Amber Alerts. Hey, I want to create an app. Hey, does everybody want to get in on this app? It's $100 to buy in, and the money's going to be used to create the app. We're going to get a software developer. It's transparent. We're going to get backpacks for the kids, blah, blah, blah. It's an NFT project.
Mm-hmm.
If I open a business doing that, you'd be like, oh my God, that's so great. But because I throw in the part that you get a little token.
All right, because you don't understand it.
That's the thing. So that's why I think that, like I said, having conversations, that's why, like, once again, man, I appreciate you having the time to do this, because it's these conversations, you know, that
over
aren't done in the dark.
And over and
over and over and over again, that you have those conversations to the point where you bring value to where somebody like yourself can be up and be like, you know what? I at least want to find out more for myself. Worst case scenario, to where now I'm like, hey, you hear somebody say something, they're like, oh, yeah, Bitcoin's a scam. It's like, well.
What makes you say that?
What makes you say that? So now it's like, right, you start
having conversations,
and this spreads almost like a virus.
Right, and the dialogue around it, healthy dialogue, increases, and then the impact goes widespread. Yeah, and it's just a patient process. Going back to like what we were sharing earlier, like sometimes it's just time.
That's it. That's it, man.
It's just time.
Time. Shoot, what? The cell phone came out probably well years before it.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't popular. Motherfuckers
getting the iPhone 14 today and didn't get the iPhone 7 12 years ago. Yeah.
Come on, man. It's just time.
It took time for it to really understand the value behind maybe having this product. For the value of that product to rise, because so many people have iPhones and MacBooks now, it might just be easier for you to work to have
tired of getting laughed at in your friend group.
Yeah.
You got the green
bubble.
Yeah,
it could
bubble.
Be the jokes like that. Or it could be the real life utility of like, oh, this makes sense now because everyone has the widespread adoption. Now it's actually hurting my business to not have this product.
Think about how many people have gotten iPhones just because they're the green bubble in the group chat and they got chastised.
Or maybe they couldn't do a FaceTime
or
group
emoji.
Chat or something.
Remember
like
when
that.
People couldn't do emojis? If you had an Android one, they would give the little janky ones. Like, people don't understand, like, not too long ago, that was basically like being in an NFT. You didn't have an iPhone and you couldn't send emojis. You were sending the little knockoff Android emojis, or it would show up as the little question marks. Instagram and stuff was nice to people because they were like, oh, no, we don't want it. We only include everybody. So if you got Android ones, we'll do it for you, too.
Right.
But people was getting clowned.
Yeah.
You could have thousands of
followers.
It's
like a status symbol. It's
like Blue Verified.
Yeah.
So, like I said.
Yeah, that shit's crazy. They definitely watered that down. I'm not going to lie. That's watered down now. They watered that the fuck down.
Now everybody can buy it.
The past week, I ain't going to lie, I've been clicking on these Blue Verified pages that are like coming under a friendship. Like, oh, who's this? Like, I ain't never heard of that person before. Assuming that it's somebody that has
a status.
Status. Yeah, exactly. And then I click on it and I'm like, nigga, I know you from school.
You got 200
not
followers
to say
of
that
the blue
you're
check.
Not valuable, but the point of the blue check is no longer validation. Has its meaning. Yeah, validation. conversation around whatever it validated.
It's like me having a valid Missouri state license. That's literally what it is. It's like if I'm 16, I can go get a license.
And you're paying for it. I don't even got to pay for my license.
Man.
Well, I don't got
to
pay
for it.
I ain't got to pay for it monthly. Let me say it like that.
There you go. Monthly and then still not even get the results that I want to get.
Right, exactly.
So
right.
It's like.
Now you just blew. Blue's Clues head ad. No.
And everybody know. And now, and see, now
everybody
knows
know.
That you're paying. And now somebody with the free joint that's getting more Instagram hits or whatever
right.
It is, like,
you over here paying $11.99. I still get
right. The only point of utilizing that for individuals out there is if your page starts getting scammed. Like,
exactly.
I'm not going to lie. Ladies, I slightly understand for y'all.
Yes.
Because
yes.
Y'all be getting these little porn pages created that aren't you.
Quick, fast. Next minute, your butt cheeks out here.
Yeah, and it ain't even your page.
And they might mess around and verify your butt cheek page before you verify your own.
Exactly. So now you can at least. So I can respect that. I can
yeah,
respect
nah,
that.
I very,
that actually might be a useful use case for the blue check mark. Honestly,
exactly.
Now I think
and
about
they
it.
They should do discounted rates for women.
You know what?
But you know, Zuckerberg ain't good with
but
ideas.
That part,
so
yeah,
we'll leave that at that on that.
Yeah,
note,
but Zuckerberg, if you want to have a conversation.
He finicky too.
You know what I'm saying? But I just want to talk to you about fitness, health and wellness, baby. So,
yeah.
You know, if you need an extra trainer on tour for your next speaking tour,
you need
know
a barber. Zuckerberg need a new barber. You got too much money. Hey, Zuck, don't cancel this or nothing, but you got too much money to be getting that chili bowl haircut. I'm just saying. I'm just saying.
You definitely go to Sports Clips. There's some Sports Clips in Silicon Valley that gets to see Mark Zuckerberg once a month.
All that tech, and you got a haircut like that. That's all I'm saying, bro. All that tech, all that metaverse. He got his haircut in the metaverse.
Haircut in the metaverse is cool. I ain't finna lie.
Nah, not if it look like that.
It's cool. He look all right. He look all right in the metaverse. I ain't gonna lie. I'm like, all right, buddy. You look a little better in there.
Look.
Hey, but shout out to Mark Zuckerberg because you made one video utilizing my brother's music.
Hey, shout out.
While you were showing some meta products,
yeah,
little
yeah.
Digital products. So, you know, I don't know how many people became my brother's fan after that, but if it was one, I appreciate you for that, Mark.
Yeah, we'll appreciate that.
Yeah,
we get
know,
your haircut.
I don't know if you did it on purpose, but.
Yeah, get the haircut.
Matter of fact, I'll pay for your haircut. Shout out my boy Rudy.
Yeah.
Northtown Catalyst Barbershop. So, you know, if you're ever in town, Mark, to look at your data centers, even though I know you don't play a role in that part of your business for real, if you ever want to, you know, slide through the town, I got
yeah.
you. All right. Anyways.
There's a little commercial.
There you go. So I want to point out one last joke before I ask you a few final questions.
Yeah.
Every few seconds, I look down and his feet off the ground. And I'm like, why is buddy feet off the ground? He flexing his quads. I'm like, you might have some tight quads when you leave here today because he keep having this full knee extension. I'm like, bro, you tall enough to put your feet down. And I don't know why I've been paying attention to that, but I've been paying attention. It keeps happening. I keep looking at his boots rise up, and he just has them up like this while he's talking. I'm like, what for? I'm like, what?
I'm working
for?
On my core.
I guess so.
Saying?
My
you
boy's sitting in the L sit on the
yeah,
couch.
Like
I'm like,
said, you know, you can never put in enough work.
You can never put in
the
work.
You can never put
I
in
guess so.
While
I
I'm sitting here
so.
Having conversations, there's a kid right now in Africa. Who's doing push-ups?
It's always Africa. Why not the Philippines? Why not Nepal, huh?
I'm just trying, you know what I'm saying? I'm just trying to play to the real grind stories back home to where I'm from, too.
I'm dead.
The fact that he out there, he pulling a rhinoceros, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Rhinoceros, and he's 13 years old, ain't got no family.
You know, that reminds
me. He coming from my
me,
spot.
That reminds me, man. My brother, one of my big brothers, my older siblings always tell me how he used to be telling stories in high school when they came to America.
Because
I've been growing up here, but they came here when they were like 14, 15.
Yeah.
He used to be telling the shorties like, yeah, back home, I have a lion as a pit.
Bruh.
He's my friends.
That's it.
His name? What do you think? Guess Simba? Yes, you are correct.
Yeah, that's all
you
gotta
are
do,
correct.
Bro. That's it.
You know, I have a little girl back home. Her name is Nala. You want to be my American Nala?
Yeah, they're going to die for it.
They're going to die for it
they
in high school. Oh, God. He's like, yeah, I used to ride giraffes to school. Really?
Yeah, wow. They'll eat it up.
Yeah, they eat it up. Oh, God. It's kind of funny. Every time I used to go back home to Tanzania, I'd be like, yeah, man, I rode a rhinoceros to the little local McDonald's over there. I came through a drive-thru on a rhinoceros. They'd be like, you lying. I'm like, never lie. And they'll be like, damn, I want to go do that. And I'm like, y'all dumb as hell, boy.
But the crazy thing is nowadays, the people back home in Africa are seeing that people believe that. So
and they playing it. They riding rhinoceroses through
through
drive-thrus for money.
Yes.
They'll be like, you want to ride the rhinoceros into McDonald's? Huh?
Yes.
I can take care of you, Tammy. $6,000.
Exactly.
It's real talk.
And you'll
ain't
pay
lying.
It.
Yeah.
And
pay
see, that's
so
the thing.
Quick.
You say it enough times, and like you said, they want to see the huts and all this other stuff. Meanwhile, they living in houses, no mortgage.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
They
no
built
property
it.
Tax.
They built it.
No property tax, you know what I'm saying? But it's like, that's what I think is starting to happen is like in America that people are starting to understand that America isn't the only place you can just have a good life.
It's going to take time. And yeah. It's going to take time to realize that. But I will also say that it depends on the individual, because I do think that there's still a wide variety of – there's still a lot of value in this – like a shit ton of value. I will still say that I'm comfortable at this point in life being able to travel back and forth to Tanzania growing up, and then obviously being able to grow up here and get access to the opportunities and that we have here that yep. definitely I don't know how many people are competing with America.
I don't have the opportunity to sit and think the way I am if I'm, like I said, if I'm back home in Cameroon and stuff like that.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, there's some dope shit happening back home, and there's definitely some benefits, but just like we said about everything else, there's trade-offs. There's trade-offs, you know what I'm saying? And some of them may work for some individuals. That's why we see a lot of Black Americans moving to Ghana, and they fall in love with it. They love that shit, going back to West Africa and to Nigeria, Ghana, buying real estate, taking advantage. But there are trade-offs that they'll share with you if you get them on a podcast, but there are trade-offs they're willing to accept versus someone else might be like, hell nah, America is the move. You know what I'm saying?
Just go visit in Nigeria or whatever, check on their real estate property and put it as a vacation for the business, do some content, come back to the States. Yep. Why are they not staying over there? Because they understand that the trade-off is
there's like a property over there. I think the best way a lot of people, the best way to live is if you do a little 6-month